Welcome to episode 15 of the Intersections on the Spectrum podcast. The Intersection on the Spectrum podcast is the brainchild of Doug Bletcher and Kelly Brown Johnson, created to discuss intersectional issues within the autistic community and give visibility to commonly marginalized, repressed, underrepresented, or erased identities and issues. We aim to introduce you to the people and stories you didn't know about but needed to hear, and hope that by seeing yourself represented in the community allows you to feel seen.
Today, Shalice joins us. Shalice goes by Autistic Travel Goddess on social media, and she is an author, YouTuber, and content creator. Welcome, Shalice.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we always want to start out intersections by learning what your identities and intersections are.
Yes, so I identify as a cisgender female. I'm African-American, autistic as well. So those are all my identities.
Okay, so this is like a really special episode for me just because travel is also one of my special interests. I used to run a blog. It's still up, but I don't add to it anymore, but it was Solo Woman Traveler, and it's really to encourage women to travel alone and to do it safely and all that. So I'm going to add in some other little interesting tidbits about specifically autistic travel later. But anyway, we learned about you through your Instagram account, the Autistic Travel Goddess. So what is it about travel that has allowed you to be so passionate about it?
It all started because, you know, I was feeling lonely a lot growing up, being autistic and being told that I'm different, being bullied a lot in school. And so I spent all my time delving in my special interests of geography and places and travel. I would read geography books, textbooks, encyclopedias, and watch things like National Geographic and the Travel Channel. And, you know, I felt this attachment to places, you know, like the nature and the geographic features of a place. And it would get to the point where I almost felt like they were my friends. Like, I felt a connection to places that I don't feel, that I didn't get to feel when it came to people. And, you know, somehow places made me feel less alone, and it made me feel more connected to the world. And that's where my interest in travel came from. That's when I decided that it was going to be my mission to travel the world when I got grown up.
Very cool.
Your geography teacher must have loved you.
Oh, heck yeah. Like, I was one of his favorite students. And I always got A's in geography classes, even in college.
The travel experience, you know, is usually described as one that, you know, to enjoy with family, friends, or whoever. And that's what makes it partially an enjoyable experience. So,
yeah.
However, you mentioned on your Instagram that you travel alone. Why do you prefer to do this?
I prefer to do it because, you know, travel, you know, it takes a lot of adjustment as it is, and I prefer to travel alone just because it eliminates the need for me to mask in front of someone else. And it allows me the flexibility to, you know, plan things on my own and not feel this pressure to, I guess, dance by someone else's rules. Like, it allows me this space to be myself and, you know, be able to explore at my own measure with, you know, rather than have to adhere to someone else's plan. So I find it easier to travel alone just because it takes that added stress away from the trip.
I can relate to that so much. I do love to travel with certain people, but very particular certain people. You know, like, they just have to be on the same level as me, kind of, like, we need to be hungry at the same time, we need to go to the bathroom at the same time, like, those kind of things, you know? Like, I don't want to be dragged around places. But, like, I love to travel with my kids. I take them on little individual trips every year, and I love that one-on-one time with them. And I hope it feeds them to want to also travel when they get older. So, yeah, that's fun. So, recently, you posted about traveling to several different cities of Rhode Island and Maine that are traditionally thought of as affluent white vacation spots. During your time, you only saw three fellow Black faces. What was the response received as a Black woman in these spaces? Just before I let you answer, I've gone places where I will count on one hand. I'm like, oh, there's another Black person. Oh, there's an Asian person. Oh, look, there's another one. Yeah, I've gone places like that where I'm like, if I can count on one hand, I'm like, right. Oh, goodness. Anyway, but yeah, I'll let you answer.
So I was really surprised. Maine, I was really well received there. Like, I didn't run into any type of unfriendliness when I was there, and I felt really welcome. And I also didn't get the stares or anything like that that I expected to get. So I was surprised by that. Now, Rhode Island, and I think this has something to do socioeconomically, because Maine, I mean, there's more of an affluent culture in Maine, but it's not, it's more prevalent in Rhode Island, in the Rhode Island beach towns. I went to most beach towns in Rhode Island, and I actually felt welcome there. Like, I didn't have any issues there. My only issue came when I was in Watch Hill, Rhode Island, which is actually known, it's like the most affluent beach town there. And it's so affluent that you have to pay to like park there. You have to pay to actually get on the beach. So that tells you like what kind of culture you're dealing with. I started out nice. I went for a walk in the morning. I was planning on going to the beach. And then as the day went on and more people started coming out, I started coming across more rude people who felt really entitled. I ran into particular this woman who I was going to speed limit, trying to find my parking space. And this woman behind me was just being really rude and tailgating me. And then I had these people when I was trying to parallel park, and they wouldn't even give me the space to do it. They were being rude. And as I was walking down to like go to the beach and, you know, walking along the sidewalk, you know, no one wanted to give me any space, and people were just like kind of trampling over me, even though I think I was moving at a, you know, reasonable speed. But it's like, I just felt like people there were making it clear to me that I was not welcome there. And this may not be everyone else's experience, but I just felt like after a while, I was made to feel unwelcome, and people were just like letting me know that I'm other than them. And I ended up leaving early because I couldn't handle it. Like, it was getting on my nerves that bad. It was too early for that.
Wow, yeah.
And I guess a lot of that has to do with affluenza, as they say. Like, wealthy people sometimes act that way.
I've never been to a beach where you have to pay to, like, be on the beach.
What? Yeah, that should have been my first hint. I would that was the first beach I've seen that I had to pay to be on.
I would have just probably turned around.
I'm thinking, like, in the Caribbean, it's kind of normal. Like, they'll have day rates, but except for Barbados, which is where my family's from.
Right.
Barbados has a policy that all beaches are public and all beaches are free to the people. And the tourists will have their own little spots, but you can stop anywhere in Barbados and walk in, and if you see the beach, go on the beach. Nobody's going to... It is yours. It's your country, so it's your beach. Right. That's it. And that's I really love that policy.
Right. And most of the beaches in Rhode Island, I've seen that more frequently than I've seen that, because I've never seen that before where you have to pay to be on the beach. But even when I went to Newport Beach, I've seen some sections that were only for residents only, because there are a lot of residents that live there. But I didn't have a problem there because, like, Newport, for instance, was pretty empty. And when I went to Narragansett, it was pretty laid back and friendly, and it was better waves, and, you know, people there were friendlier, so I didn't have any issues there. I had fun there, actually. And that beach, I didn't see anything about having to pay or, like, be a resident there as well, so that was different. You know, that was kind of normal for me because I'm used to public beaches. But I understand why, you know, they make the beaches that way. Like, I can kind of understand maybe they want a certain atmosphere, but my main problem was just how I was treated by the people there, you know. At Watch Hill, I felt like it was mostly racially motivated that they were treating me that way because I was the only black person on there.
And Shalice, you've done a lot of traveling, so what do you think are some of the biggest challenges of traveling for autistics?
First of all, I think that adapting to a new routine is a challenge. It is a huge challenge because you're not only going to a new place, but you're uprooting yourself from your typical routine. And you're having to adjust to, you know, new food textures, new smells, new sounds. And then you're having to deal with crowds and a lot of sensory overload in certain places in the process of traveling, depending on if you use an airport or if you're in traffic or at an attraction. So there's that. And then the other challenge that a lot of people in my audience have is the affordability of travel, because 85% of autistic people are either unemployed or underemployed. And so that makes it difficult to afford travel for that reason.
I was just going to say that's a barrier for sure. And
yeah.
I think there's the barrier of affordability, but also from what I've noticed in the autistic community, a lot of us underestimate our abilities. And
right.
There are some parents who have been very well-intentioned, but have almost put their autistic kids in a bubble. And that has limited them. They feel that maybe they can't do it, you know? And so if they never get an opportunity to try, they figure
that
they can't.
That's really important. Like, the confidence that you just brought up, you know, instilling the confidence in them to be able to travel, because, you know, my parents were like that too. Like, for the longest time, they were, I guess, trying to hold me in a bubble because they were scared for my safety. But eventually, I pretty much begged them to let me travel and let me go off to school in another state and all of that jazz. Like, I pretty much had to beg them to let me spread my wings. But a lot of parents, I understand the intention behind it. but it does, you know, hinder the autistic person's confidence, you know, by making them afraid to try something new. And that's another barrier. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is something that's important.
Oh, was it me? Okay, so there are so many benefits to travel. What do you think of some of the things that have improved your life or skills that you've learned by your travel experiences?
I've definitely built confidence and self-esteem by going to new places that I never thought I would go to and learning new things I never thought I would learn and doing things I never thought I would do. Like, I went parasailing when I was in the Bahamas, and I went snorkeling in between two continental plates when I was in Iceland. And because of my special interest in geology and geography, you know, I got to actually study live into a science book, and I was able to explain and see what I knew and what I learned to come to life. And so that made me feel super confident. And not to mention stepping out of my comfort zone and learning how to advocate for myself and my needs. And also meeting people, which helped me with improving my social skills when I meet people during my travels.
I don't think I'll be doing the parasailing anytime soon, but I love everything else that you just said. So when you travel there, you're going to so many new environments, and that can definitely cause lots of anxiety. One of these new environments are hotels. What are things a hotel maybe can do to make your experience as good as possible?
You know what? Right now, I love what Hilton is doing right now ever since the pandemic began. They have this feature on their app. When you book a hotel room, you could actually do a digital check-in. And you can put your card information in, the date and everything, and you can skip the checkout line. You can actually, like, get your digital key, open your door, and enter the hotel with the digital app. You can totally skip the front desk all you want to. And that helps me out a lot because, you know, when I get off a plane and it's been a long day at the airport, I don't want to have to deal with lines and crowds. And, you know, sometimes I don't want to interact with other people. So that helps me out a lot, you know, having to skip that process. And number two, what I also think that they should do is maybe, I would love it if they would offer our favorite snacks, you know, like ask the customer what they like and offer to them in their room upon arrival, you know, stuff like that, little things that make a difference and make one feel somewhat at ease with the new change.
I can echo that. It was Hotel X in Toronto that I went to. It was very expensive, but I did pay for it. It was business. Anyway, and it was amazing. It was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had at a hotel, because you walk in, somebody greets you at the door, and I don't remember. He's like, "Hi, my name's Peter," or whatever. And there's this long, like, corridor to get to the front desk. He's like, "I'm going to help you with your bag, and I'm going to introduce you to, like, I don't know, Vincent," whatever his name was, at the front desk. And I get there, and they said, "Oh, you know, you must be tired. We understood that your flight was canceled, and this is a business thing, and whatever, and you just probably want to be home." And I'm like, "Yeah, how did you know?" Anyways, and she's like, "Can I have your cell phone number?" And I said, "Sure." And instantly, I get a text, and then I get shown up to my room, and I go in there, and the text is basically saying, "If you need anything, you can text us." They said, "You can call us for sure, but otherwise, you can just text us." And then they had a thing on the TV where I could communicate with them. I could see the menu. And it was just like, I didn't have to talk to anybody if I didn't want to. I could just text and then leave. And I was like, oh my gosh. It was like, it was one of the coolest experiences ever.
That is so perfect. And I feel like more hotels need to offer that. And I don't understand why the rest of the hotel chains have not followed suit during this pandemic.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds like a dream, what you were offered.
It was. It was amazing. Too bad I couldn't have stayed longer or stay again. But we'll see. Maybe by mentioning this, they'll let me come back. I don't know. So now you've been up to 10 countries by this point. So what countries have you been to? And what's the next one that you're going to travel to?
So where do I begin? So I've been to Scotland, Austria, and the Netherlands, Czech Republic, Belgium, Germany, Luxembourg. I've been to China, and I've been to the Bahamas, and I've been to Iceland and Canada. Where I'm interested in going next, I've actually been eyeing the African nation. I really would love to go and see the Seychelles Islands in East Africa, Tanzania, and I want to see Kenya as well. I'm dying to see those three places.
I want to go to Zanzibar.
Antarctica's my dream. Oh my god, like, I can't wait to like go to Antarctica.
Oh my gosh. That's a rough trip. That's a rough trip.
That's what I love about it. Like, you get to be on edge and be really in touch with, like, the earth in its raw state. Like, that's what I love about it.
Wow, okay. I would love to go to Luxembourg too. I actually have one of my guidebooks, because I like going to all these little European countries.
Luxembourg was gorgeous. And the thing that's what's interesting about Luxembourg is it's actually two levels. It's a two-story city, basically.
Okay.
And the city was made, like, from a castle crater. It was made from an old castle ruin. That's why it looks that way. And it's fascinating when you see it.
Okay. And so what made you go to, let's say, I don't know, you went to Scotland and you went to and Czech Republic? It's like so, like, I don't know, they're so out there. So, like, what was it about those places that made you want to go there?
Well, I've always wanted to see Austria, to be honest, because of the beautiful mountains and, like, just the gorgeousness there. And, you know, I took German when I was in high school and college, and so I wanted a chance to, like, flex my German skills. Germany, I really liked the culture there. And what I really wanted to see about Czech Republic was I felt like Czech Republic was a little bit different than other countries I've been to, like, in the sense of the culture and just the style and the way that, you know, the languages and just, like, how it looked. I wanted to see more. I was really interested in that just because of how different it is than Western Europe. It was more of an Eastern European type vibe, and I was really interested in getting to see that.
Wow, so I speak German too. Oh. I went to Germany, and I wanted to go to Austria. It's a hilarious story. When I called the embassy, because my passport was going to expire in like 6 months, and for some countries, you can't go into them if your passport's about to expire in 6 months. Yeah. Anyway, so I called the Austrian embassy, and I'm like, you know, I'm asking him if it's a problem, and he stops me, and he's like, are you sure you're not talking about Australia? And I'm like, no, I want, he's like, you want to come to Austria? And I was like, yeah. Poor guy. And it was kind of funny. But yeah, I'm kind of curious about your experience in Germany, because when I went to Germany, you know, there was a lot of curiosity about my race, my ethnicity, and they thought I was a native, because I said, you know, from Canada, and they're like, oh, are you like indigenous? Are you, because the Germans have this weird relationship with Canadian indigenous people, where they want, like, some groups are trying to be like indigenous Canadian. It's a little weird. A little strange. But so they were like asking me if that's what I was and things like that. And then there was like the skinheads in Berlin that I was a little freaked out about personally.
Right.
Yeah, but I only saw them once and they didn't bother me. But yeah, that's, you know, those kind of concerns that we have when we travel.
You know, I was surprised I didn't run into the skinhead types in Germany. I actually spent most of my time in Cologne,
okay,
Germany, and, you know, Munich and the countryside.
Okay.
Since I was in the city, you know, I didn't really have anybody, you know, treat me any differently, and I didn't have any, like, most people welcomed me with open arms, and I had a lot more friendly conversation there. But once I got out to the countryside of Germany, like, I felt like there were people who were not as welcoming to me. Like, I think I couldn't tell if they were curious or if they thought I should be in their areas. So it was definitely a different vibe, like, out in the countryside. You know, when I was traveling on my way to Austria, you know, there's, of course, the rural area between Cologne and Austria. Yeah, like, the rural areas were, yeah, you know, I did not feel like I belonged out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I find here in Canada, when I encounter German people or German tourists, they're mostly like, because I'll speak German to them, and they're kind of looking at me like, what?
Yeah.
They're like, you speak German? Where'd you learn that? Like, they're just like totally confused. So
when I spoke German in Germany, they actually would start speaking English to me when I spoke German.
Oh, yeah?
And
oh,
I think it's because they appreciated the fact that I was going to speak their language, or maybe they, you know, it could have been the fact that they appreciated it, or it could have been the fact that they couldn't understand my accent. Could have been that too.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I'm still stuck on the parasailing, so I had a question for you, Shalise, about that. Was that like something you always wanted to do, or was it more? Oh, okay.
It's something. See, I love heights. Like, ever since I was a kid, I love roller coasters. Always had to get on the highest roller coaster, and I, you know, was into skydiving, bungee jumping. Like, I just love heights, and I love thrilling activities. I like things that are considered dangerous. And yeah, I'm about to bring something up that might be controversial, but speaking of that, I don't react to it the way normal people do. Like, I don't scream or get scared like most other people do, because ever since I was young, like, I know a lot of autistic people can relate to this, but ever since I was a kid, I guess I had a muted sort of sense of fear or something, because I did not feel the same sense of fear that most other people would feel when it comes to things like that. And that has a lot to do with my ability to be able to do things like that.
So now you're bringing up a really interesting point that I was thinking about before. I find I have encountered, I don't know if it's not a subset, but like there's a certain profile, it seems, of specifically autistic women that travel, and they travel alone, and that are kind of like us. And so people always ask me, you know, are you scared? It's like, I've been to some, you know, pretty out there countries. Like, I've been to Yemen, I've been to Morocco by myself, I went to China by myself, you know, things like that. And they go, well, aren't you scared? And I kind of always feel that the world, or people in general, regardless of their circumstances, are overwhelmingly kind. Yes, I've had experiences, you know, I was grabbed and things like that. But I believe that like 95% of people are kind. And I don't think, this is very interesting, because I've been out with people, with, you know, with friends and things. And let's say like somebody like a homeless person approaches us, and my friend would be very, very scared in the situation. And I'm just like, oh, whatever, you know, I'm going to talk to him like a person, whatever. And I don't get that same vibe. And I feel that I'm able to read people in such a way that I can tell if they want to harm me or not. You know, somebody just being weird or perhaps, you know, inebriated or whatever.
That's right.
Is different from somebody who wants to harm me. And I think, you know, even though we say that, you know, autistic people aren't great at reading body language and things like that, for whatever reason, I'm not scared in situations of people, even if they're acting kind of aggressive or whatever. I feel that I can kind of de-escalate it, and I can kind of read them, and I feel like, okay, this is a situation where I'm going to ignore. This is a situation where I need to run. And this is a situation where I can just talk to the person, and then they're going to calm down, and it's going to be okay. Like, I find that maybe I have that skill or something.
Yes, and I know for me, I tend to rely on, I guess, logic, so to speak. Like, because I'm not really good at intuition like that or reading people, I tend to rely on logic, and I don't really get scared of someone, you know, who's inebriated or someone who may be, I guess, acting a little weird. I tend to only get scared if I see them carrying a weapon, or if I see someone carrying, you know, or shouting or being aggressive in some way, then that's the only time that I, you know, tell myself, oh, it's time to leave, or it's time to get out of the way, or it's time to, you know, exit the situation. Like, it has to be something visible for me to be able to tell when it's time to exit a situation. It has to be something blatantly obvious. Otherwise, I know how to really ignore something and not let it get to me. I had a guy when I was in Iceland. I was, you know, at a coffee shop in Iceland, and I met this one guy who, you know, it seemed like we were friendly at first. You know, we were talking, having coffee together, and we were just like having a conversation. And I went to, you know, I left, and he, you know, found me on Instagram and wanted me to go and meet with him again. And I'm just like, I plan to do this excursion. I do not want to meet. I did not plan to meet with you. I plan to do this thing that I scheduled that I was going to do. And he kept like sending me messages, begging me to like come over, and, you know, begging me to do this and that. And I just ignored him, because I'm like, yeah, I made plans. I did not include you in the plan. So yeah, no, I'm just going to ignore you. And shortly after that, he sent me a bunch of messages cursing me out, like basically telling me that, calling me all kind of names, you know, all kind of sexist names and stuff like that. So of course I mocked him. But behavior like that lets me know, okay, yeah, I dodged a bullet. And yes, I'm glad that I did not go and meet up with him, because yeah, I think it might've been a cultural thing, but I felt like, yeah, he was a man who felt entitled to a tourist's time, because he saw that I was a tourist. And so he felt like that I was just going to up and just do what he told me to do. And I did not do that. So,
right. Or people have this assumption too, that you're lonely or something, or that you don't have people that you want to go back to or things like that. You know, like, I'm always kind of clear. I'm like,
think that we're running away from something, or that we don't have any friends at home, or that we're lonely, or that we don't have any kind of life at home or something, which is not true.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. I mean, maybe there are people like that, but that's not us. That's not us. Like, I'm like, no, I want to go back home. I'm good. Thanks.
Travel does give me a break from some things. Like, if anything, travel makes, when I travel, I am running away from things that make me unhappy. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm running away from things like injustice in America, and just like the way the system is, which is a whole other podcast. Like, some things I don't like, and I tend to run away from it. Like, when I see things like, you know, police brutality and, you know, like racism and whatnot. And like, yes, I'm running away from that because I don't enjoy being a part of that or seeing that. So, yeah. And I tend to think that when I travel, I'm running towards something that makes me happy. I'm running toward my passion and a great life. And so I don't necessarily think I'm running away from something. I think I'm running towards something that's best for me.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool. That's a great way to put it. And then just before we get to the last question, so I'm Canadian. So where in Canada have you been?
I have been to Toronto. I've been to Quebec City, Montreal and Quebec City.
Montreal, yeah.
And my favorite city of all was like Vancouver.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Gorgeous.
That's where I was I was counting black people in Vancouver. No, it was Victoria. I was counting black people in Victoria for sure.
Oh, yes. I was in Victoria as well. Victoria is gorgeous. But
it's wonderful, but yeah, I was counting on like one hand. I was like, okay, where are the black people?
I thought I had to count, but when I got to Victoria, I really counted.
Yeah, exactly.
And Quebec City, I did a little bit of counting too. Montreal, not so much. Toronto, not so much, but Quebec City, definitely.
Yeah.
I wanted to see, you know, if it wasn't for the pandemic, I actually planned to go to Nova Scotia and New Brunswick and Prince Edward Island, Labrador. I wanted to see that, you know. But, of course, the pandemic got in the way. But I got a feeling I'm going to be doing counting there as well.
Oh, for sure. But Nova Scotia is really super interesting because they have black Nova Scotians that were there, I don't know, like the 1600s or something.
I've read about that. That's where they got the name Africville, Nova Scotia from.
Right. And that got burned down. So Africville does not exist because they burnt it. The city burnt it. The city did not want them there. Anyway, that's a whole other story. Or the podcast. We need to have Shalice come back so we could talk about all these dark moments in Canadian history.
Definitely.
Halifax, I've been to Halifax and I love it. I've gone twice now. Love it. Yeah, so much fun. Just a great place. Very friendly. And lots to see, so for sure.
They're not having a heat wave, I bet.
I don't know, but we've had our hottest temperature in Canada ever. Because all across, like, so now it's raining. Now it just got really dark. We're raining here now. But, like, BC was, like, they registered at, like, 45.7 degrees Celsius. So it's, like, 100 and something Fahrenheit.
Where are you in BC?
So I'm not in BC, but I have family in BC, but I'm in Montreal. So we're getting, like, average, like, 35 degrees Celsius, which is not abnormal, but it's not that normal either, if that makes sense. Anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So let me know when you come.
I've been to Montreal twice, and yeah, when I come back, I will be happy to let you know.
Okay.
So, Shalice, before we let you go, we're always thinking about stories to highlight here on Intersections on the Spectrum. Yeah. What would be some stories that you would want to hear?
Me, personally, I would love to hear stories of autistic people who are professionals in their careers or successful entrepreneurs who are autistic, because I think that, you know, it would be really helpful to see more of that content for once, just because I'm sick and tired of seeing the story of, you know, the tragedy story of people with autism not being able to do much. And I want us to showcase more people who are doing, you know, out there doing the best they can in life and killing it in this world.
Absolutely.
So, I'm going to recommend that you listen to our podcast with Maisie, because she created a whole series, like a whole workshop on how to become an entrepreneur. There's this specifically for autistic people. Okay, perfect. So yeah, she's amazing. And I'm here in Canada. I'm trying to make an autistic entrepreneur directory. So I have the Autistic Entrepreneurs Network, and I'm trying to help encourage entrepreneurship in the autistic community. So
that's something I'm passionate about, because I myself am an entrepreneur, and you know, that's something I've been super passionate about for years.
We have to have you back, Shalice. We're going to talk about entrepreneurship next time.
And black in Canada.
That's right.
That's part two. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Shalice. Loved the conversation.
Thank you so much for inviting me to the podcast.